Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We're a political, comedic, social, and current events podcast. Basically, we're going to give you a nerdy outlook on what's going on in the world today, letting you into the inner conclave of nerdom, and we're here to take over the world with our nerd imperium. So all hail the Currently Nerdy Empire.
All hail.
All hail. All right. We give this podcast to you free every week on currentlynerdy.com and on iTunes. So please feel free to rate, review, subscribe, and share our page to all your friends, family members, loved ones, kindred spirits, canoodlers, people you're having an affair with. Anyone
canoodling
you see,
is like cuddling with someone, right?
I don't know.
Out with someone. It's something like that, right?
Whatever. If you see
some
someone,
type of intimate connotation.
You see someone, hit them with the fist of Currently Nerdy and spread the gospel of Currently Nerdy, because you truly don't love someone until you spread the gospel of Currently Nerdy. Hallelujah. Holla back, little homie. Amen.
Amen.
Yes. We are your hosts of this wonderful, magnificent, illustrious, I need more adjectives. Just godforsaken podcast.
Oh.
My name is Diz, and I am your sports and pop culture nerd, which means that I know about ESPN and TMZ, which actress is sleeping with what celebrity and all that garbage. That's me.
Things that don't matter.
Exactly. And now to the guy who's going to help you get an A on your history exam.
Yeah, I will.
Take it away, naughty professor.
My name is Ali A. Alomi. I am the classic nerd of the group, which means that I'm interested in things like reading and writing and school, the stuff that was now popular but was nerdy and unpopular back in the day. And I'd like to bring you the information and background behind all the topics we discussed. V?
Hey, friends, this is V-Tran, your comic book, food, travel, video game nerd. I also cover movies and all the things that Ali and Diz do not.
Guys, I'm very, very, very happy right now.
Your team won?
Yes. You know, I know, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean a lot, but it does put a smile on my face when we beat those fucking goddamn terrible Redskins and their racist ass name.
You know what's funny is like Avians are divided into,
yeah, we've
49ers,
said this,
Redskins, and
Cowboys.
It's
yeah, like, pretty much
three teams really.
That's because, yeah, I don't know, because when the
those
Avians,
are the places they migrated.
No, they never migrated to Texas.
No, other than Dallas.
Yeah, they went to San Francisco and Washington.
Yeah,
but and how did Dallas get put in the mix?
That is a good question.
Because at the time, Dallas was the team that was winning Super Bowls, and they were like America's team. So like they're like, oh, we need to be American. Maybe we should like the American football team of
I'm
the Cowboys.
I'm pretty sure that's not at all how it happened. But
yeah,
no, it's
well, you know what? Maybe if you did, you wouldn't be in so much trouble right now. You guys wouldn't have so much issues.
Yeah, seriously. They wanted to be Americans, so they like the American football teams.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, the image of a cowboy is, I mean, I guess very much an American.
Yeah,
you know, like American. I guess a caricature. For a lot of places, like a lot of, I'll try American restaurants when I travel just to see what it's like. A lot of it's like barbecue, but most of it has like, it's got either the Cowboys or it's got that like 1930s like soda shop type thing. You know, like those seem to be kind
diners.
Of like, yeah, like the diners type thing.
Like vintage. Like,
yeah, those are like the quote unquote American themed restaurants that aren't like a Chili's or a Friday's that happen to be international.
You know what's funny is like for Afghans to say jeans, we say Patluna cowboy, right? So like cowboy pants.
Cowboy pants, yeah.
They're jeans.
But that's actually not uncommon. A lot of places called jeans, cowboy pants.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's like, so the cowboy is very American. Jeans are very American.
Yeah, jeans as a word has only been imported recently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's also associated with interesting cultures. Like in Indonesia, it is connected with the gay subculture.
The what now?
Gay subculture, jeans.
Oh.
It's seen as a foreign import.
Aha.
That makes sense.
Like homosexuality is a foreign import.
That's the idea in Indonesia, is they accuse like the gay community of participating in a foreign export, that there is no concept of homosexuality.
Ah,
that it's an American import into Indonesia.
Yes.
That's fascinating, isn't it? But it's tied into the culture of wearing jeans.
They come from
like wearing
America.
Jeans is like, it's like an American thing. Like, oh,
you're being American.
It's true. It's like, well, what is like the, we're wearing your blue jeans now and all that stuff? Like, I guess there's a game called Civilization. Everyone plays. It's one of the most addicting games. One of my most favorite game franchises. There's a way of winning a cultural victory, and when you do win, they actually go, now we're wearing your blue jeans and listening to your pop music.
What the fuck?
Like, damn you, you know. And it's like interesting because that's the jeans have become a very American.
Well, it's also
idea,
a
right?
Generational like, thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I remember my teacher talking about how her grandfather and her father, you don't wear jeans. You wear jeans to the coal mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, because like they're rugged, right?
Yeah, so you don't wear them out to dinner, or you don't wear them out and about, or you don't wear them around the house. It's something that you wear to the coal mine, right? Or a certain group of people wear jeans, right?
Yeah. Cowboys.
You wear pants. You wear slacks, right? And so as the generations moved on with counterculture and all that, jeans became the thing to wear. Now they're a staple.
Yeah.
I mean, I would dress business casual at work.
And you wear jeans and like a button down. I wear jeans
and a blazer and a button down.
Yeah.
Or a cardigan and jeans.
Yeah.
So it's always jeans, but it's called business casual.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's funny.
No, but
a few decades ago, definitely not business casual.
Yeah. Look,
I'm a confused coal miner.
Yeah. Now, aren't we all?
Here's the thing, okay? So tonight it was really good for me. I needed it after all the shit that's been going on in the world. I needed something to give me some.
It's a tough year to be a bearded man.
Yeah, it's been very tough for me these past like couple of.
Because you're like a full on bearded man.
Yeah.
See, I don't pass as Middle Eastern sometimes. Like most people think I'm Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
But occasionally, some people think I'm either Mexican or some form of Latin American.
Oh, I've gotten that before.
People think I'm Latino, or they think I'm Mediterranean, like that, either Italian or Greek or something like weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're from Portugal. I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Like, well, you're Greek.
Yeah. And I'm like, nope, not even remotely close.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you're
we're all like. Vaguely brown. Yeah.
You're learning to speak Greek, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I already know Greek. Fluent in ancient Greek.
Ancient Greek, okay. So, well, I mean, they're not going to know the difference,
Hit fluent them with the Hellenic Greek.
Shit.
Just like I'm fluent in Latin, I'm not fluent in Italian. Like, I can understand Italian a little bit because it's still derived from Latin, so I'm like, okay, hold on. Let's face it, though, right?
If they're going to assume that you're Greek,
I should just toss out.
They're not going to know what Greek is.
To be honest with you, I could just start speaking Arabic and they think, oh, that's fantastic Greek.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah,
most of them don't even like just
culturally literacy. Cultural literacy is not a thing in here.
You can yell out like foods,
just random couscous.
Yeah,
yes,
tabula,
hero.
Yeah,
hero. I love how you made that into like a thing.
And you know, Italian hand.
You have to do it.
Yeah, just throw in an Italian hand motion and convince them I'm Italian.
Yeah, look, I'm telling you,
can't pull that off.
No, I can't pull anything off but Middle Eastern. Maybe sometimes Hispanic, depending on how racist you are.
Hispanic, really?
Yeah, I get that all the time.
Really?
Hispanic, is that wrong?
When you didn't have your facial hair, like when you used to hang out when you were younger,
uh-huh.
and the way that you dressed and everything.
Uh-huh.
Not really. But I could, you know.
Why, because I wore some baggy clothes? Were you trying to
you
say?
You wore really baggy clothes. You wore this like thug casual.
Yeah.
You look very Middle Eastern. You have the Middle Eastern nose.
I do. I got a Middle Eastern nose. I got Middle Eastern eyebrows, Middle Eastern beard, Middle Eastern fucking receding hairline, all that shit. Yeah.
And I have the male pattern. People always mistake me for Scandinavian.
Yeah.
I get that all the time.
Does anyone ever ask, what is the ethnicity they go to? They don't say Asian. They say Chinese.
They go,
is that the common one?
Like, Chinese, old people, it's usually Chinese.
They go, are you Chinese?
And then the
only Asian they know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, look at this Chinaman V.
The pseudo intellectuals.
We'll throw in Japan.
Yeah. They make so you Korean? Well, no.
You know, if they throw in like Japan, if they don't say Chinese, but they say Japan, they're trying to be cultured.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you look Japanese. I'm like, no, I'm Vietnamese.
No, I'm waiting for that guy to be like, you know. You really look like you're from Laos. You know, like, what the fuck? Where did that come from?
He's like, oh, crap. You know,
like, if they ever say that.
This guy's seen a map.
Yeah. Listen, I will teach
you. Someone get this guy a drink.
I will teach you some Laotian for you. Okay?
Do you know Laotian?
I know a few words.
Okay, I want to hear this, actually.
I know sabadi. That means hello. And then.
Wait, hold on. How do you say it?
Sabadi.
Sabadi.
It means hello.
And if I ever have a Laotian student, I'm going to be sabadi.
Yeah. And but do not ever.
Watch, it's not hello.
Yeah, watch
it
something is, like suck my dick.
I'll get there.
This is language skills are restricted to discussions you have with prostitutes. So,
no. Listen.
How much?
Yeah.
How long?
Yeah. Suck my dick.
That's so gross.
I know. Maham means balls.
Maham.
Maham means balls.
Have you ever noticed that like the word for balls sound? It doesn't like it's not the same word, but it's like fitting.
Yeah. Maham.
Right? Yeah.
Like in every language, when you think of the word for balls, it's like, yeah, that's fitting. I couldn't think of anything else that would fit for that.
Maham.
Maham. Then, like, that's fantastic for
and
me.
And then to say motherfucker, it's bakha.
Bakha. Oh, this is a really tough language.
Bakha.
Yeah.
Bakha. It's a lot of sounds that you don't hear in English.
And then
bakha.
To make fun of someone's penis, you say hum noi.
Hamnoi.
Hamnoi means you have a tiny penis.
Hamnoi
means tiny dick.
That's a very Vietnamese.
It's very Vietnamese sounding, isn't it?
Yeah. Sounds like Hanoi.
Yeah.
Like a North Hamnoi.
Vietnamese. Hamnoi.
Wait, what was hello again? Sabadoi?
Sabadi.
Sabadi.
Sabadi. Yeah.
So to my Laotian friends, I always go, Sabadi baka Hamnoi. Wow. Hello, you motherfucker, tiny dick.
Why'd you do the next
one? Because that's how fucking my friend's dad taught me how to say it. They will. You had to say "Sabadi bakha hamnoi." It means "Hello, motherfucker, tiny dick." I'm like, oh, okay, it works.
Thank you, Mr. Cultured on this podcast. We're all world travelers in one way, shape, or form.
I've traveled the world.
You travel the world. I travel the world. I study the world. Yeah. Diz learns through old men teaching him how to cuss. Like that's
our own method.
I know. Yeah. I'm studying like transnational histories.
I'm in the field, you're
experiencing food culture around the world, and Diz is learning how to cuss.
Yeah, I know how to cuss in multiple languages.
I know you do.
Korean, Kazaki.
We collectively make one international man, jet setter.
We make one fucked up international man.
I know, really. Yeah,
I know how to cuss in Vietnamese, and V doesn't.
Oh, I'm
a. Tom, am I?
Isn't there one like you're supposed to make? No, that's Spanish. We make a toma, right? It's like you make a hand gesture with it.
I don't know.
Like it's interesting how hand gestures.
This is interesting.
I can't see that.
Like the palm fist.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Wait, what did you? How do you say it in Vietnamese?
Tom, am I?
What does that mean?
It means like motherfucker or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
you're
know.
You're getting an education here today at Curly.
And then true. When you yell Tom, it means fuck.
Were you yelling that today? A lot during
the game.
The game.
No, the game went well. Cowboys won. I went dum-wah when the fucking Redskins scored a touchdown in the end to tie the game. And then I went.
You know, you should start doing that. You should start cussing in other languages when you're watching TV just to throw people off. Like all of a sudden you're just fluently cussing in Korean.
Kazaki.
Dude, they got to bring you to one of those Vietnamese coffee shops.
Oh, yeah. I used to play pool at a Vietnamese pool hall, so that's where I learned that from.
Oh, yeah. Those places are seedy as hell. My parents still don't let me go to them.
Diz.
I'm almost 30 years old.
It was a Vietnamese pool hall called Great Wall.
Mm.
Great Wall Pool Hall.
That's
ran by Vietnamese people. All Vietnamese people there, but somehow they had a Chinese name.
Were the waitresses wearing bikinis and stuff?
No, it was a mom and pop, and then they had their daughter and shit. Yeah.
Because a lot of those Vietnamese coffee shops, they're like these seedy smoking areas.
Yeah, I've heard about these.
And they just have like women. It's like in Chile, they had this thing called coffee with legs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like coffee shops where it's like varying degrees. Some of them were brothels. Other ones were just like coffee shops where women wearing bikinis and stuff would serve you. Well, like these Vietnamese coffee shops are notorious for it's that like old Vietnamese guy with a giant crack like pinky fingernail sitting in the corner, and then we drink this like really strong coffee with condensed milk, and they just like smoke and you know play a gamble.
These type of lounge cultures exist around the world.
Absolutely.
We think of because in the U.S. we have them as bars,
right?
Bars are the equivalent, right? But bars are actually very kind of sad. At the end of the day, it's a really sad type of culture. They're not filled with a lot of richness here in the U.S. Whereas in other cultures, like British pub culture is very different than a bar. Like my British friends are always like, no, you guys don't have pub cultures.
It's true.
You got bars. Pubs are different. You eat at pubs. You know, you watch the game at pubs. You talk. It's very, now bars, you have some like sports bars. You watch the game and whatnot. But it's very, very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bars are very here. They're very corporate, right?
They
have a function. You go in to get laid.
Right? That's like different dive bars, maybe.
You go in to get drunk. It's not lounge culture.
Oh, right? They have lounges.
Lounges are starting to build up. But like the Mediterranean is known for its lounges, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gets hot, so people stay out really late, and you nurse a glass of wine all night long.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you do.
Drinking by pace is a lot different in other cultures.
And then
what does this mean? Coffee, drinking by pace. I've never heard of this term before.
Coffee shops.
Like controlling your drinking. Intake.
You can control your alcohol.
Tea shops. Yeah, that's enough.
You're supposed
that's
to,
something that we're very good
I
at.
I thought you're just supposed to like just finish a bottle as fast as you can and then try to.
Well, that's from, we get this directly. That's our German roots.
And you're
US.
Supposed to find in the US, that's woman our German sleep with roots, you.
Right? With the ideas of drunkenness, right? Drunken revelry. That's a very Germanic thing. Like the Brits drink. They can outdrink us. Like we often joke that when we hang out with our British friends, we have to adjust what our level of alcoholism is.
Kiss my ass.
What we consider alcoholism is considered a normal day for them. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Bring your little fucking British friends around me and
but they don't get drunk, right? Like, drunk culture is not a British thing. Like,
I'll beat their asses.
Low class people do that. Chavs do that, right? Or people who are, you know,
poor
do that. Yeah, ultimately, you're supposed to drink and hold your drink. Yeah. In the US, we do have a drunk culture, but that comes from our Germanic roots, right?
Word.
So it's fascinating though, because you see the other forms of drinking culture and lounge culture in different countries. Things like drinking tea, drinking coffee,
smoking hookah.
And Afghanistan, a prime example of this are chaikhanas.
Yeah, tea houses. Right?
Tea houses. As well as the samovar itself.
Yeah, the big old
the tea. Samovar is...
Shout out to Samovar Network.
Shout out to Samovar Network and Omar and all those lovely people.
Yeah. Make sure you have already watched our Samovar Network video.
And we're going to be having another one tomorrow, so tune in for that.
Yesterday.
Oh, yeah. When you hear this, it'll be yesterday.
Yeah.
I get confused.
See, that's why
it's yesterday. We filmed it yesterday.
Yes.
Watch it. It's on Islamophobia, gun violence.
Am I going to have to go on your Facebook again and watch you trouncing pseudo-intellectuals and morons about their stupid opinions?
I don't know why it is, but it's like every time we have one of those groups, there's always one pseudo-intellectual rears its ugly head.
And he tries to battle you.
And then he gets defeated.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But he doesn't know, and he just keeps coming back for more.
Yes.
They're really, I mean...
More memes.
But you go... Yeah,
I sprinkle memes
in there. You go in there just to stir shit up.
I know.
There was one debate where, like, the debate had died, and V's like, not on my watch. And even then, he literally started the debate all over again because he antagonized
it. I don't remember that.
That's so true. You did. The debate was over.
You start posting up Kevin Hart memes like, you gonna learn today.
And then all of a sudden, like, that, like, the person's ego couldn't take it, and they had to, get like, come back and, like, all right, it's on.
I'm sorry.
No, it was quite an entertaining, like, that's a very V thing to do. Samovar culture is another example of this, right? These giant tea urns, basically, where you pour tea out of it. Mm-hmm. These type of cultures exist around the world, and it allows you to sit down and have a conversation.
Yep.
So tea houses,
Turkish bath houses.
Turkish, it's not exactly lounge culture. That's a different thing.
But it's like
the hammam is different. The hammam is different.
The Vietnamese coffee places around Garden Grove.
Yeah, but that's
shit is whorehouses.
But
right?
That's what I'm saying though. Like, part of that that culture is it's gendered, right? It's meant to be gentlemen's a gentleman's club.
Yeah.
And some of them are very high end and they're meant to be just to sit. But some of them, especially the working class examples of it, tend to be seedy.
Yeah.
Right? And so there's a culture of sex involved in it. In Japan, tea houses involve women that you pay to have conversations with you and maybe other things, right? But they're scantily clad and their job is literally to be conversational.
They're in kimonos.
They're meant to be conversationalists. And this comes right out of what? Geisha culture.
Yeah.
Right? So it's this type of culture of lounge and discussion is very fascinating to me because it's kind of non-existent here. We have coffee shops, but they're not meant for discussion.
Yeah.
Right? You have a section of the coffee shop where you sit down and you just do your work. You don't discuss with people.
We have discussions.
That's true. Even like the tables are small in a lot of places.
Even discussions, they're impromptu. They're not.
No.
It's not a culture.
I mean, the coffee shop. Here's where I have my discussions. All right. I have my discussions here.
Right. Well, that's us. I mean, talking about culture wise.
Yes. Yeah. I do it at the barbershop.
Barbershop, only certain places. Yeah. Urban areas.
I go to black barbershops.
Black culture. Yeah. Absolutely. The barbershop is a staple of discussion.
I love
you talk politics, spot, talk shit. Love it.
Yeah.
Love black. I can't find any decent ones around here, in my opinion.
Creations Barbershop in Coast.
That's far of a drift.
Off of Hollywood's in Huntington Beach is a good one.
It's a fantastic, fantastic type of culture. Yeah. But in general, you don't have it. The equivalent that we have is gathering around the TV, really.
Yeah.
That's true, right? Yeah.
That's the only thing that we kind of have.
On the internet now, everyone's having fucking online discussion.
Yeah, you have online discussion. But there isn't a discussion culture, which is fascinating to me. Because as a result, we end up having really stilted political discourse.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, Donald Trump, I mean, just now, decided that he's going to ban all Muslims
from entering in the country.
From entering into the country.
Not if you're already here.
Well, if you're an American Muslim and you leave, you don't get back in.
Wait. If you leave like on vacation?
Yeah, you don't get back in.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he says, and American Muslims. So, but before we go into the issue with that, let's talk about how this came about.
The fucking moron is what it is.
This is true.
Yeah, that.
But literally right after we discussed the mass shooting in Planned Parenthood, there was another one.
Ah.
San Bernardino.
Yes.
Which it trended
Yeah.
As a misspelling.
Yeah, it's San Bernardino.
Yep.
Not Bernardino.
Fucking
Bernard.
The internet can't. You had one job.
I swear to God.
You couldn't even spell it right.
Fucking Google Maps it.
So San Bernardino, mass shooting, two individuals. Originally, there's a lot of mixed information coming out of it. Three people, two people in tactical gear, supposedly.
Yeah. When I first heard it, it said three white males in tactical gear leaving in a van.
In an SUV.
An SUV. Yeah. Something like a big car.
So this mixed information is one of the reasons why it's led to a lot of conspiracy theories.
Uh-huh.
Some people are rejecting the official story. Some are saying it's a false flag. All sorts of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not into stuff like that.
I don't particularly.
As much as I actually appreciate questioning the official narratives, great. Yeah. I'm not fond of conspiracy theories. I don't think they help anyone.
No, not at all.
But it turned out that these two individuals, which originally were thought to be white, were Muslim. Mm-hmm. One was, the guy
was an American Muslim.
Was an American Muslim, and he married a Saudi girl.
Yes,
just a few months earlier, and brought her over. So now there's this conversation.
No, they had a kid. Huh? They had a baby together.
I don't care. Yeah. The point is that he's married.
A year or two ago he's got married.
No. They got married recently.
But they have a kid together.
Really? I'm pretty sure that they...
Because the fucking news anchor's dumbass went in there and was like looking at the crib and shit.
Have a kid together. That's true. So there was this question of whether his wife radicalized him because people were quite shocked. I'm like, how could he possibly have...
They claimed his wife was the one who was part of ISIS.
That's what I'm saying. There's this question about did the wife radicalize him? Because people were quite surprised. It was a very out-of-character act on his behalf, right? But it has resulted in a very interesting response. By interesting, I mean retarded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really should stop using that word. It's horrific.
Yeah, no, don't use that word.
But it's a habit.
It's become idiotic.
It's a dreadful response. One, the media sensationalized it horrifically. They went into his place like fucking tragedy vampires, like vultures,
rummaged through
it. Everything's like, oh look, he's got a Quran, and oh look, he's got this image,
like the rug and like the prayer mat.
And then they went through his like baby's crib.
Yeah,
it's
really typical of a child. It's teddy bear.
It's like, oh mom,
what does this mean?
It's like crazy. It's a typical American family.
It's a very disgusting way of handling tragedy. Right?
I heard CNN was the worst of it too.
CNN and MSNBC was the worst of it.
Yeah, MSNBC was vultures. They were embarrassed.
I mean, they should be embarrassed about it. And people called on journalists called them out on it. Like that's disgusting. But then this led to a discussion about ISIS again, right? Like, was this an attack on ISIS? Which is unlikely. It seems like there's very superficial connections. Like, maybe these people were fond of ISIS or favored ISIS, but they're not part of the group. But ISIS attacks big targets, not San Bernardino.
Yeah, San Bernardino. They claim the woman was radicalized by ISIS, but she was in Saudi Arabia.
We're not sure. But the point is that they were Muslim, right? Yeah. They were Muslims. One was a Muslim American. So this has led a conversation about Muslim Americans in general.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the process of radicalization and how do we keep safe? Because this was quite a big attack. 19 people were killed, right? There's naturally resulted in panic.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's led to outright responses from Republican candidates on radical Islam, right? So much so that Obama himself stepped up and actually had to give a speech.
Yeah.
This is the first time he's actually addressed something of this kind from the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Right? And so he gave this speech about how these people aren't associated, they're not Muslims, and that we need to not blame Muslims and marginalize them, but that Muslim communities need to step up and root out the extremism that is in their communities. So this conversation is very fascinating to me on several parts. One, what gets kind of downplayed in the entire thing is that it was a mass shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this. Before we talk about what their motives were or what the fuck anything, let's talk about how these people were able to buy fucking military-grade assault rifles with bulletproof vest penetrating bullets. You know those are illegal, right? Bulletproof vest.
They also had tactical gear, right? So they had like body armor and stuff like that.
And you know where they got it, right? The fucking loophole.
Yeah, and this is fascinating to me, quite fascinating, because this is not being discussed, right? And certainly it is something that we need to discuss, is how do people like that, right? Just like how do people like Robert Deer end up with these type of weapons, right?
Bro, you could be on the no-fly list and still buy guns.
Fascinatingly, that's a problem, right? Fascinatingly, the Robert Deer incident, Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs, has been subsumed by this
But white people are loving this shit.
Right. So, like, no one wants to talk about that. They've, like, people forget that only a week earlier there was this other mass shooting done by a white Christian.
Then I don't, right. I mean, you know, I'm not going to, don't call them mass shootings anymore. They're practicings of freedom.
They're practicings
of freedom. Yeah, they're
mass shootings.
Exercising the Second Amendment rights.
But it's fascinating that we are unwilling to talk about mass shooting, but we are very willing to talk about extremism.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I think a conversation on extremism is good, right? It is. We should have a conversation about how is extremism as a process undertaken? How does it happen, right? What does it look like? That's a great thing to have. But if we're unwilling to talk about these other factors, like how mass shootings involve of getting these weapons through loopholes, getting these weapons that are ultimately meant for the military and war zones – if we're unwilling to have that discussion, I don't know how far we're going to go.
Yeah, I just don't get it. It's we want to look at other problems too and just be like, we want to bring up a problem. Like, oh yeah, radical Islam, radical.
We like to export our problems.
Yeah. But
ideologically speaking.
Let's look at an issue here. I mean, we harp on it all the time because I hate having the fucking talk. Do a podcast after a mass shooting. It bothers the fuck out of me. It
brings the tone down.
Yeah, it's a big problem. Because it happens way too frequently in this country, mm-hmm. right? Like, we said this before, we've had more mass shootings than we've had days in this country. And that's a terrible statistic. So let's talk about that. Let's forget about the motives, all right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what... because the motives are going to be people are going to have motives to do anything, mm-hmm. but let's talk about the modes of being able to carry these fucking motives.
Now, I actually slightly disagree with you, right? And this is that I think that you can discuss both. I think motives are very important, right? I don't want to dismiss the fact that there is a process of radicalization that happens.
Yeah.
I do want to destabilize it or decouple it from the idea that it is a unique to one community.
No, I'm not saying. Right? I'm not saying.
For example, we talk about extremism. Within, even left-leaning people like Obama is making a serious mistake when he says that Muslim communities need to be vigilant. I'm saying, yeah, good. Muslim communities should be, but Muslim communities have already been.
Yeah.
They already are.
This is true.
But the fact that you don't recognize and you say they need to do this, it's a problem. Secondly, it also conveniently washes your own hands of your contributing factor. It's easy. It's easy to completely ignore that, you know, we as Americans have a hand in the radicalization process.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe our foreign policy or our domestic policy, our rhetoric has a factor to play in it. Secondly, it also, or thirdly, I should say, it ignores the fact that radicalization is not unique to a single community. It's a societal problem, right? So Robert Deere was also radicalized.
Yeah, he's a radical Christian.
Right? There was something that happened there. And in fact, the overwhelming majority of terrorist acts in the United States are from white patriot groups. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to turn around and go, white people, you need to figure out the cancer that's in your root. I'm saying that as a society, as much as I joke about white people, mm-hmm. we have to acknowledge that this is a societal problem. In fact, if we were able to kind of decouple if we were able to kind of rethink our language, we would acknowledge, if we were to throw the rhetoric out the window and listen to the analysts, we would recognize, for example, that the process of radicalization is identical to the process that produces gang violence. It mm-hmm. is identical. It is the same process. And if you understand that, you now have a social and political strategy to dealing with radicalism.
Because here it is. Like, of the three of us, I think I have the most, interaction with gangs. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've lived in an area where gangs were prevalent.
Right.
The reason why you get these gangs, like, I lived in an area where there was the second highest MS-13 area in the U.S. You have L.A. has the most because they have the most El Salvadorian immigrants. And then mm-hmm. second is Fairfax County, Virginia. People don't really think that when they think Virginia, but no, there's a mm-hmm. huge influx of El Salvadorian immigrants there. So MS-13 ran rampant where I lived. Mm-hmm. There were people getting their fucking fingers chopped off, mm-hmm. people getting shot, killed, massacred. It's because they feel... like they can't connect with the rest of society, so they make their own inner community.
It is. It's a protective act. It's about. It's dealing with alienation. You feel alienated from the wider society. You have grievances with the wider society. You feel as if the wider society isn't addressing your problems.
Let's look at the Crips. I've mentioned this before, maybe a few years back on a podcast. The Crips ultimately stands for community resistance in protest or in something like that. It was basically the black community in Watts and like South Central LA that were getting like beat down by the police and like getting like humiliated by mm-hmm. other white people and stuff. They stood together and they wanted to stand against oppression. And then a couple years down the line, you know, like they got involved with illegal activities like drugs and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Bloods. The reason why they're called Bloods is because we're of the same blood. We're going to look mm-hmm. after each other. That's where these gangs come from. MS-13 started because they were afraid of other like Hispanic gangs. So the El Salvadorians, they call themselves Mara Salvatrucha, like, you know, like mm-hmm. the soldiers of El Salvador mm-hmm. got together to protect each other from other like gangs. And that's where it comes from. You left a hole in Iraq. We went there, right? We all want to blame Obama for ISIS and all this bullshit. And Obama's foreign policy, you know, we're not.
In 2007, the DIA, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. which is a collection of intelligence agencies, already told us that it was the failure of Iraq's policy before Obama was in,
but yeah,
that produced it. So as much as people like to say the dates don't add up, our own intelligence agencies exactly. say that it was our failures beforehand.
Good old W went in there and look, we dislike Saddam just as much as the rest of the world, all right? None of us wanted Saddam in power. I don't think Saddam should ever lead any country. He was a horrible human being, and he shouldn't have been a fucking leader. I don't know
who us is. Who are you speaking
of? Us three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The collective, the podcast. Okay. But we went in there without a strategy of how to fix that country after taking out the dictator. So you left this giant hole, and now you have all these people that are pissed off. And let's look at it in like a way that we can understand. All right, if this were the U.S. and you know someone, we had a dictator in the U.S. and someone came in and took our dictator out, but at the same time we're killing our family members and stuff. Like, you know, they were innocent bystanders in this, and that traumatizes you. If someone fucked with my family, I will do whatever it takes to get revenge. Like if someone kills like, you know, like my uncle or my brother or something, I'm gonna.
You're a bloodthirsty motherfucker.
No, don't act like you wouldn't either. That's the one thing where you and I could agree on. If someone fucks with your family, it's a whole different story. So it's like I look at these people that are joining ISIL and I don't condone what they're doing. Like I don't think what they're doing is right, but I see why they join a group like ISIL.
No, just because I understand them doesn't mean that I condone them at all. In fact, I condemn
anyone
who's stupid enough to join such a group. But the problem is, and the same thing with gangs, but understanding the process doesn't mean that you acknowledge it as valid or legitimate.
No.
I don't. I think it's absolutely, in the same way that people who join gangs. I think it's atrocious. I think it's violent. I think it's horrific. And I think that anyone does so at their own detriment and at the detriment of their family members and their society. But the problem is that we're not having a discussion about the process. We're mm-hmm. not discussing the factors, right? So when we say things like the Muslim community needs to be vigilant, which I'm not saying it shouldn't. Sure, that's great. But when that rhetoric is there, what we're doing is we're putting the spotlight on one community as if it is one community's problem. It isn't. It's a societal problem. These people have grievances with their society. When society alienates a group of people, those people will find ways of then creating cohesion, creating protection, creating a sense of solidarity, and then use that as a means of attacking that system, which oppresses them or alienates them, right?
Just like,
so the same way with gangs. Gangs feel that society doesn't address their problems. One of the issues with gangs is they feel that the cities aren't supported by their law, the legal system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you join a gang for what? Protection. Nine times out of ten, it's protection. Those gangs then strike back at the system because the system is stacked against them, right? That's why illegal activities happen. Drugs, killing, etc. These are all forms of political violence that's taken up against a political infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
ISIS is the same thing. Terrorism is the same thing. People forget that. The problem is that there's this Orientalist mentality when we talk about terrorism. We see it as a uniquely religious phenomenon, and it's not. In fact, there are a large amount of secular terrorists. In fact, the origins of terrorism is secular.
Mm-hmm.
The terrorists of the 20th century were nationalists and Marxists.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
People forget that, right? The Black Hand. What caused the World War? It was an act of terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Franz Ferdinand.
Franz Ferdinand, but not by religious people, by nationalists. It was always nationalists and secularists.
Yeah. Right. Or, I mean, Guy Fawkes
or Irgun in Israel, right? These were all nationalists that originally committed acts of terror. Religious terrorism, right? Or religiously, and I'm not going to call it religiously motivated because it's not motivated by religious, motivated by political reasons. Yeah. But terrorism has a religious component to it. Religion is used as the language by which that grievance is expressed. Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the things that Michael Schur, a top CIA analyst that now is a history professor at Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, says brilliantly is that we've never met an organization like Al-Qaeda before. This is when he was talking about Al-Qaeda, even before ISIS. Mm-hmm. He goes, we've never met an organization like them because we've never had an enemy who's so open and honest with us.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
Their goals are very clearly stated. I mean, this is no mystery, right? Even our own politicians admitted that Osama bin Laden was pissed off because after the Iraq war, the United States never left Saudi Arabia. The United States parked its military troops at the two holiest shrines for Muslims.
Yeah.
It's a military act, right? They saw that as a military occupation. They didn't see this as a religious imperative,
yeah,
but as a political issue, as well as the state of the Palestinians in occupation, being occupied by the Israelis. Uh-huh. Those are the main issues, right? So they were very open and honest about this. But the language that they use to justify it is always what? Religion. That's the cultural capital, mm-hmm, that people use. It's as if I were to speak to you, I'm speaking to you in English, right?
Yeah.
So they speak in Islam.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
In the same way that Robert Deere and a bunch of these other, that people forget that Robert Deere is not unique. He's not an outlier.
Yeah, he's not an anomaly. Yeah,
well, people shooting up clinics is an outlier. I mean, it's been happening for years. And in fact,
the Lord's Army, right? Mm-hmm. Not just the Lord's Resistance Army down in Central, yeah, Africa, mm-hmm, right? In Uganda. The Lord's Army here.
Yeah.
A group of patriots who bomb abortion clinics. They don't get the press that they get, but it happens quite regularly. Not just that, but the Christian Patriots groups, they're called Christian Patriot groups, yeah, right? Are terrorist organizations.
Yeah.
Right? They're militias.
Of course, yeah, but they have the name Patriot of, right, them.
So we and Christian.
So we, yeah, don't talk about them as unique, right? We don't go, oh, Christianity has this extremist element in it, because it isn't a uniquely religious phenomenon. It is a political phenomenon that has a religious component to it. Now, I don't want to dismiss the religious aspect of it.
Yeah.
Some people say ISIS has nothing to do with Islam or Al-Qaeda has nothing to do with Islam. I never take that stance.
Yeah.
And this is why sometimes Muslims get angry at me, because I am an academic. I have much more of a nuanced stance.
Yeah.
I say, no, Islam has something to do with it. It's just not the primary motivator.
Yeah.
People don't read the Quran and go, okay, I'm blowing shit up tomorrow.
Yeah. The question is, though, because they would have to, if by that very point, they would also have to discount any of these Christian extremists,
right,
as not, well, being Christian. Statistically, well, also, right,
doesn't work. Yeah. Right? Statistically, it doesn't work. There's a great book called Missing Martyrs, right, in which a political analyst and a professor of political science goes, if religion was indeed the motivator for terrorism, then why isn't there more terrorist acts by Muslims? There's 1.8 billion of them, and not even 0.01%. of terrorism in the Islamic world.
Yeah.
The idea is that even statistically speaking, right, there isn't a direct connection. And most terrorist experts agree with this, right? Robert Pape of University of Chicago. It's all University of Chicago. They're the poli-sci people, right? They do political history a lot.
Uh-huh.
There is another example. He said 99% of all suicide terrorism, right, and he studied every single known case,
uh-huh,
has nothing to do with religious fundamentalism of any kind, not just Muslim, but Christian. It has nothing to do. It's always political grievances. It's often very secular political grievances, right? Now, again, that is not to say that religion doesn't play a factor in it. It does. I also don't play this game of, oh, ISIS isn't Muslim. That's a game that's just not worth even playing. It's something that ISIS itself plays. Who is a real Muslim and who's not?
Mm-hmm.
That isn't helpful. It's not worthwhile. I say whoever claims to be a Muslim is a Muslim, but that we can say certain things with objectivity. That one, religion is not the primary motivator for acts of terrorism. That two, that ISIS's activities are not representative of orthodox Islamic tradition or of widespread Muslim practice and belief. So we can say those things with certainty. So once we've acknowledged that, then we can start looking at the process of radicalization, right? How does this thing happen and how do we address it? How do we deal with those political grievances? Now, I'm going to say something quite controversial, that ISIS and Trump have a lot in common, and not in the way that you think. I'm not saying this to be polemic. I'm saying this that the process behind ISIS and the process behind Trump are almost identical.
What do you mean?
Let me explain. So There is a global worldwide phenomenon going on right now, and that is the rise of the right.
Okay.
These hard right nationalist groups are on the rise. In England, you have them in the form of originally Britain First and then the EDL, English Defense League, mm-hmm. who, and then, of course, that became a political party known as UKIP,
okay. right,
which is the equivalent of their of our Tea Party.
That's what their last prime minister was?
No, no, no. None of them, they haven't won, but they've won seats now.
Oh, okay.
Right, so they're in parliament. France just recently voted in the regional elections. Six of the 13 elections voted for Marie Le Pen's National Party, National Front. And this is a hard right, ethno-fascist group.
Okay.
Right? That is almost exclusively anti-immigration, pro-hyper-nationalism, militant nationalism, hyper-capitalistic. India's BJP Modi, right?
Uh-huh.
The Prime Minister Modi is of that hard right. Right? So what we see is that we have these rise of these groups that are hard right.
Yeah.
They exist because of a wider global issue, and that is globalization and influx, right? Whether it's a movement of capital outside or movement of capital inside. So in the case of, for example, ISIS, theirs is a response of imperial forces moving into their country.
Okay.
In the case of these national groups, it's a sense of immigrants moving in.
Okay. Right?
So it's a sort of reverse colonialism in their mind. But it's that direct response to the increased globalization, yeah. right? In a world where the political system functions, that sentiment, that anti-xenophobic, anti-immigrant, hyper-militant group has a political voice and becomes part of the political process. So groups become UKIP, become National Front, become BJP. Right?
Uh-huh.
Become part of those groups.
Become Tea Party.
Become Tea Party. If there isn't a political structure, they become insurgencies.
Yeah, I get that.
So you see the process behind both are the same. If we understand the rise of global imperialism,
uh-huh.
of neoliberal imperialism and globalization, we understand the rise of these parties.
Yeah, I never look at it
now,
that way.
Now, in the United States, we have something similar going on, but in a different fashion. Trump, why am I comparing them, right? He's part of that same process. But we don't have a parliamentary system. We have a two-party system.
Yeah.
So you have a Republican Party, which is traditionally conservative. There isn't another party for these ethno groups to form.
Yeah.
So they, what do? They infiltrated the Republican Party.
Aha.
Right? So this is why the Republican Party's rhetoric has moved more and more to the right. Why Trump is saying stuff like, we should ban all Muslims. This is fascistic demagoguery at its finest. I mean, again, and you know, if anyone you know, knows history a little bit, you can read this and go, holy shit.
Yeah.
One of my friends, Bree, tweeted out that if you know Nazi Germany at mm-hmm. all and you read Trump's tweets, or I think she said Trump's timeline, it sounds literally like a demagogue out of Nazi Germany.
Yeah, I had a customer today, right? Like, I don't know how we got to talking about Trump or... He was just like, you know what's weird, man? He's like, people don't realize that if you take out the word like Muslim and put Jew in there for what Donald Trump is saying,
we'll be calling out as anti-Semitic.
It
would literally mirror like the
mirror
words Hitler. Of guys like Joseph Goebbels. And
now, what's fascinating though is that he's only possible, right? Because he's tapping into the same sense of alienation, right? So you have a group of far-right people
uh-huh.
who also, like ISIS, feel alienated, feel the society has let them down, that they don't have access, and so that they've radicalized. But their radicalization happens within the context of the political system.
Uh-huh.
Because we have a functioning political system. Well,
functioning.
That's debatable.
Air quotes.
Air quotes. That's debatable. But we have one, right?
Uh-huh.
Iraq doesn't.
No.
So why is it produced in Iraq, right? Why does terrorism exist in Iraq? It's because that political system isn't there. If that political system existed, right? Let's say that a viable democracy existed in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Groups like ISIS would be hard right political parties.
Yeah. They
wouldn't be terrorists. We saw this where? Tunisia. Tunisia had an Islamist group known as Ennahda. Ennahda won the elections,
uh-huh.
right? They won the elections, they didn't do too well, and then they abdicated. This is a prime example that even Islamist parties are not equal, they don't automatically equal terrorism. That
sure.
they do can participate in the democratic process. Another example of this is Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood, when it was first originated, was suppressed by a secular nationalist, Jamal Abdel Nasser. They were radicalized and they became terrorists. They, over time, because of the system, moderated themselves, became mainstream, and became a political party. The Muslim Brotherhood won elections in Egypt. As much as we may not agree with them and we dislike them, but these are all case examples of, if a political structure exists, these groups then participate in it.
Would it be the same?
But because it doesn't exist in Iraq, they participate in their own structure, which is the creation of a state formation.
What's the one in Palestine? Is it Hezbollah or Hamas that's running?
Hamas.
It wasn't Hamas.
Like... Hamas is a terrorist organization that became a political party.
Yeah.
Right. Now, it still has a paramilitary wing, right? Just because they become part of military the process doesn't mean they give up their paramilitary activities. In the case of Hamas, because the political structure hasn't evolved, right? But this is what the issue with ISIS is. ISIS and Donald Trump both represent a process that is currently going on globally, and that is the rise of ethno-fascists. Right, these hard right fascistic groups that are repurposing the kind of ideas of super state, super people. If you listen to ISIS, a lot of their language is it's Nazi.
Yes,
they're talking about, for example, they take words like ummah. Ummah is an Arabic word that means the community of believers,
right? Yeah,
which is really the diaspora of Muslims, and they're repurposing it as a superstructure. Right, they're repurposing as a super state. It's very Nazi-esque. The ummah is the perfected people.
Yeah.
Right?
I could see that.
You see that? So like they repurpose these kind of fascistic, Nazi-est elements that you see being parroted in Donald Trump. The difference being that Donald Trump has a political avenue in which to voice those grievances. So the average basement-dwelling white dude, right, who hates the black peoples and the gays, right, and the Muslims, has someone voicing his frustration.
Don't forget the Mexicans.
In the name of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a different form of radicalization, but it's the same process. So that's what my thesis was. See, it makes sense.
It's super weird.
It does. It's also depressing as hell.
It is depressing as hell.
I just need to get off Facebook.
Yeah, you need to get off
Facebook. I got
to
tell you, man. Like,
or you need to do what I do and call.
I need to start culling, right? And I've culled. I've actually started cutting some people from my thing.
I keep it small.
But it's just kind of ridiculous how I mean, it's just dumb. And all I see now is just people who are insecure at their masculinity.
It is. Well,
it really, like, it
seems, my micro dick thesis, right?
Yeah, like,
the rise of the right has always been associated with micro dick syndrome, right? By micro dick syndrome, I mean they feel what? Impotent.
Yeah.
Right? That's what the right is about. If you think of Nazi Germany, it was a response to the fact that Germans felt impotent.
After World War I.
It was a response to World War One, reparations, the failure of the economic system. It was a
also micro dick syndrome. I mean, the Jewish communities, because they were tightly knit, were able to maintain their head above water financially a lot of the time.
They suffered as well, but it was easy to scapegoat, right?
Yeah.
Whenever vulnerable communities exist, we scapegoat them. It makes us feel powerful. It's bullying. It's schoolyard bullying just taken on to the political level. You have a bully who feels really bad about his small penis, right? And so then he picks on all the smaller kids so that he feels bigger. Right? ISIS does the exact same thing. They pick on Christians and the Yazidis and the Shia Muslims and Sunnis that don't agree with them. Donald Trump picks on Mexicans and Muslims and black people and women and Rosie O'Donnell and all, you know. So, like, I just wanted to
throw Who doesn't he pick on?
Right? So the idea is that it's about feeling empowered, about feeling you feel, first and foremost, this sense of insecurity. You feel impotent and you need to address that. And the only way to do so is by taking on this kind of militant bullying stance. You see it all over the world happening. Now, why it's so depressing is that for many years, we said that the right was dying out. And by the right, we mean like fascism. Right?
Yeah.
Now, they've been making this prediction over and over again. Back in the 1930s, right? There was this big controversy amongst the Marxists, right? Theodor Adorno, Horkheimer, these people were going, how is it that capitalism didn't fall and produce communism? What happened? How did capitalism lead to fascism, right? And what they saw in America, which was the right of corporate capitalism, which was just as fascistic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they saw two systems emerging. They go, how did this happen? And that's where the theories of hegemony and cultural influence come in. Because up until that point, everyone was like, yeah, capitalism falls, communism comes around. So again, people have been, even after that, Nazism died. We have Francis Fukuyama talk about, you know, the Soviet Union ended. Francis Fukuyama wrote a great book known as The End of History, with pretentious political scientists who claimed that neoliberalism had won, that there was no other viable political system in the world but democracy. And then all of a sudden, you have the rise of insurgencies, right? Uh-huh. The 1990s, all of a sudden you start to see insurgencies happen. The Iraq War happened. The Iraq War happened, led to this big issue of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. All these big things, right? Destabilizing the region. And now you look at it and you go, the rise, this is in the death throes of the right, of the fascistic elements within our society, that are embedded in democracy, in mob rule, in the unthinking masses. This is a resurgence of it.
It's a fucking phoenix.
This isn't a death throw. It manages to repurpose itself.
The phoenix rising, bro.
So now we have people like Donald Trump.
Right? Isn't that kind of the nature of all the parties, though, in the sense?
The nature of political structures is that they always work to endure. Right, they always try to survive, and they do so by repurposing themselves, by reinscribing a new way.
Yeah, well, it's no different from. It's not quite the same, but like the intelligent design movement was the creationists at one point,
right?
They literally changed. They adapt the stances.
Racism
in
is
order
another
to move
example.
Through.
Right?
Yeah,
racism endures, but in different ways. The only difference is that, like with creationists, sometimes those are conscious acts.
Yeah,
more often than not, it's a historical process. Right, so it's like no one person's going, we're going to do this.
Yeah,
right. Whereas racism is a prime example of this. A lot of people think racism doesn't exist because they can't tell the difference between soft racism and hard racism. Thank you, by the way, by being inspired by my words, but not giving me credit or copyright. I'm copywriting my shit from now on. So you know,
damn, you just pulled that out.
Yeah. No one knows that. The people don't understand that difference, but we've moved on from hard racism. Not really.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But a little enough that, right, just enough that people aren't out there protesting black people coming to school.
Yeah.
Right? They still do protests in other ways, right? Like showing up armed outside of a mosque.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah. Or Muslim free gun ranges and shit.
Right. So, like, it still exists. Hard racism exists.
Also, by the way, that was voted on and said it was constitutional
by the Florida Supreme Court. It's the Florida Supreme Court.
Okay, it's America's Wang. Who gives a shit, right? Yeah. And then outside of the Wang, there's the fucking panhandle, right? Ain't shit in Florida other than NXT.
I'm sure that sooner or later someone will sue the hell out of that again.
It's fine. That motherfucker shot himself one of those Muslim-free shootings.
Yeah, one of them did. But that guy still, he has a Muslim-free zone.
And then George Zimmerman's bitch ass is out there selling Confederate flags and shit.
No, you hear what he did recently?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Heard about the pictures and
stuff? Oh, yeah, yeah. He revenge porned somebody.
He revenge porned someone because she hooked up with, like, he's like, not only is she a cheating scumbag, she cheated on me with a Muslim. Shows how, what
you know
she
what?
Say?
It makes me happy. Think, you know, good for her.
So she's like, he was like, that's how low her standards are. That's how dirty she is.
Oh,
a dirty Muslim. Yeah. A dirty Muslim.
She slept with you.
And
so
then, why not? Taste, obviously, right? Yeah. But then he started revenge porning her. So, like, not only is he like,
isn't that
militantly racist, now he's also a misogynist piece of shit.
He was put up there as quite the iconic figure for a while.
This is what I like. There's a part of me, if I wasn't so noble. If I was petty, I would go back to my friends who were all for George Zimmerman and be like, how do you feel now?
Yeah.
Like, do you still think he was innocent?
Well, what's really, you know, we do a really good job of just kind of throwing people by the wayside once we can't use them anymore. Cliven Bundy being another perfect example.
Like, no one wants to talk about how he turned out to be a fucking racist.
Just like, and then no one says shit about him. Everyone just kind of forgets.
Yep.
Right. And the same thing happened with Zimmerman, only the motherfucker keeps coming back into the news. Only every single time I go, yeah, Zimmerman's doing some shit again. Everyone's
always
like,
stupid.
Yeah, of course. The guy's a scumbag. Of course.
So he's never in the news because, like, he donated to charity or you know.
Of course, they're the people who you know, there's the internet being what it is. People will make up shit. Like, there was a Zimmerman, like, apologist group for a long time. Like, oh, he donated money to troops or some shit.
Well, people don't. The sad thing is that the only reason he was so successful at beating his case is because a bunch of moronic racists funneled money to him.
Yeah.
Right? And they do that every single time. There's this kind of this separate race fight, you know, this race conflict. They go in and they pay for the police officer, they pay for Zimmerman, they do this stuff. And they don't realize that as a result, they're ensuring that type of violence continues. They're ensuring that type of racism continues. They're the people who ensure that the system continues through them and their actions. It's why today Zimmerman is sending out reverted porn.
Yeah.
I blame the people who helped him win his case.
Oh, yeah. Well, people like, let's face it, right? You never know what people are really thinking in the back of their minds until actions start to come out, right? Yeah. Now you can pretty much anonymously give money to these people. So, I mean, you're going to see that, right?
Not surprising. Now, I don't doubt that after fucking Trump said that he's going to ban Muslims, his poll numbers are going to go up again.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course. You're going to be like, let's just inter all the Japanese while we're at it, too.
Well, the funny thing is, his campaign manager, that's the excuse he used.
Yeah.
He said, like, they asked him, like, how do you justify? He's like, well, you know what? Trump's right. We had to do this back in World War II.
Oh, God.
We had people attack innocent people, and we had to take the Japanese and put them in internment camps. Trump's on the, I'm like, wait a minute. You do realize that quoting or citing Japanese internment is not helping your case.
Yeah.
It just proves that's an embarrassing moment in American history. Let's not bring that up.
Going along with the Trumpisms too, you know what his response was when he was on Greta? It was, I have Muslim friends, Greta. That's his response. They're wonderful people, but there's a tremendous section and cross-section of Muslims living in our country who have tremendous animosity to Greta Van Cisterna, who was also a cunt. It does not apply to people living in the country, except we have to be vigilant.
You know, the funny thing is, like, a lot of his business is done with, like, really rich Saudi and
yeah,
like,
of Dubai. Course. Yeah. Well, I mean, he has a talent for turning an $8 billion corporation into a $2 billion one. So,
the reality is that at the end of the day, Trump is unlikely to win the nomination. The Republicans are all kind of in revolt right now. You can see that old Republicans are going, no, thanks, we're done, right? Everyone has kind of stepped up.
I mean,
but the reality is that even if Trump doesn't win, the damage is done.
Right? Yeah.
What Trump has done, there's two things that we need to understand. One, Trump has provided cover for everyone else.
Yeah.
So as a result, we will have, I'm going to predict it, probably Cruz or Rubio.
Yeah. Right?
And those people are just as dangerous as Trump. In fact,
yeah, but they're filtered. They're filtered.
They're not filtered,
right?
But they seem filtered compared to Trump.
Yeah.
They're just as bad. Cruz is considered to be the single most hated person in politics. You know that, right?
Yeah.
He has zero support in Congress.
He's shut down
from Republicans. Congress. John Boehner, when asked about what do you think about Cruz, flipped the person off. He's like, that's what I think about him. Mitch McConnell hates him. The guy who the most maverick
fucking
Republican Mitch McConnell hates him.
That guy's a scumbag too.
Even McCain goes, that guy's a wacko bird. He actually called him a wacko bird.
A wacko bird?
Yeah.
People also forget that Cruz was originally one of the high-ranking campaign officers for Bush in 2000. Yeah. And Bush hated him so much that he was the only campaign officer that didn't get a position in the White House. When they asked him, he's like, I just don't care for the guy. He's one of the most disliked sociopathic people in politics because it's all about him. And if anyone is bored, please, please, please go look up the unedited version of his behind-the-scenes campaign ads. They're hilarious.
When he's coaching his family?
He's coaching his family. Trevor Noah did some really funny stuff at The Daily Show with those unedited. Because those are from donors, right?
Yeah,
donors have to film it, so they give him money. So it's like a little way of show the behind the scenes. It is probably the most cringeworthy 13 hours of video I've ever seen in my life.
Wait, you watched 13 hours?
I didn't watch of it, but it is 13 hours worth of it.
13 hours of him coaching his family?
Yeah, and it's really creepy. They're like, okay, hug her. No, hug her again. Hold her a little tighter. It's so creepy. But then I want you to go and see what Trevor Noah did with those clips and go get creative, because he said you could literally edit them in all sorts of fantastic ways. He made one into like a horror flick, like a trailer for a horror flick. One was a sitcom. Check it out. Do that. It's hilarious. So two things. One is that it gives cover for Graham in one thing. But the most damage that it's done is that it's mainstreamed racism.
Yeah, it's basically bolstered the idea.
So those racist fringe groups are no longer fringe. They're now mainstream. Even if Trump loses, the damage is done. Future elections will reflect this type of extremism.
Before we go, I wanted to run a hashtag for the week. I don't know if you guys watched The Daily Show, but Jon Stewart just went back on again for hashtag worst responders. Did you hear about this?
Yeah.
Talking about like Mitch McConnell and Congress blocking. Basically, they wanted to give the first responders in 9/11 health care and to take care of them and all the respiratory issues they had responding to 9/11, and it went from like a table of like five or six people who were first responders to only there being one at the table this year, like 5 years later.
Holy shit.
Yeah, but the Congress has been dragging their feet on taking care of these of the people, the first responders in 9/11. So it's I would tweet Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan hashtag worst responders.
Yeah,
just to kind of let, because that's just ridiculous, man.
Yeah, but it's fascinating that these are the, it's always these hard right people that yeah. are screwing over both the troops and first responders.
Well, what I love about these people, it just
it frustrates me too, because I have friends who are hardcore Republicans that are in the military. And then when I point out to them, like, look, I don't even, it's not even, I'm not giving you a CNN report. I go directly to the congressional records, like the, and I go, here, look, look who voted against this. It was all the Republicans in Congress.
Yeah.
Hey, look who put in this bill that cuts the, your
funding. Seriously, they don't want to give anyone shit.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's what's, that's kind of fucked up for what, when you think about it, right? Because, well, these are the people, they're the same ones who are going to yell and scream about veterans and about taking care of Americans and shit. And they're also the ones that are pulling all their health care and all their benefits away from them from the other side. It's the most insidious thing I've ever seen in my life. And then they sell you on such bullshit.
It's political convenience at the end of the day. So this has been an interesting podcast, a very political podcast. I've given a couple theses in these podcasts. Let's see if it'll turn out accurate.
I'm just tired of this shit, guys. Seriously. Can I be honest with you? I'm just fucking tired.
I'm tired of your shit.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm ready. I'm done. Fuck everybody.
We're gonna end it here at fuck everybody. And Diz, why don't you take us out?
So yeah, you could catch us on Facebook, like us on there, facebook.com/currentlynerdy. Like our page, share our posts, write in our wall. Tell us what you think of Ali's thesis. There was many of them tonight.
There was.
But they were good ones. They're good ones. I'll give it to you. I'll give you props. It was
like my dissertation defense or some shit tonight.
They're props. You can catch us on Twitter, @currentlynerdy on Twitter. V wants to make the hashtag of the week, #worstresponders, and I'm totally cool with that. Make sure you fucking tweet those Republican bastards that. Also, #AskCurrentlyNerdy is always going around, so make sure you send us some questions there. We're on Instagram. Go on there and like our pictures and follow us. It's Currently Nerdy. Give us some cool comments on there, under the pictures, so V could feel special. We're on Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. Reblog, retumble, do all the good stuff that the Tumblrites do. YouTube. Search for us, Currently Nerdy, on there. Make sure you're subscribed and commenting, so that way you could win the Overwatch backpack. I'm thinking the weather. The Overwatch backpack. So make sure you're subscribed and comment on that BlizzCon haul. iTunes, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. We need some more 5-star ratings. And if your friends don't like iTunes and you want them to listen to us and you think that they would enjoy it, currentlynerdy.com, great way to stream our page there. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. You can get a hold of V, let them know.
Of course, you can find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at vtran214. That's VYTRAN 214. Ali?
You can catch me on my website at aliolomi.com, aliolomi.com, or on Twitter at aaolomi. Diz, how about you?
You can find me everywhere at the World Wide Webs at Dizbulla, DizBullah.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And just because V says fuck everybody doesn't mean that we really want to fuck you. We actually love you.
Except if you're Trump.
Yeah, fuck Trump.